You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
G'day, mate. You're listening to Insomnia Radio Australia with music from Down Under.
Just a minute. Don't hang up. Hello.
Insomnia Radio Australia and IRC FM presents IRC FM Australia. IRC FM Australia starts now.
You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
So many years, all people are listening to music, and they like it, but only few of us know that music is...
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode 380 of IRC FM Australia. Coming to you today from a palace in suburbia, with me is special guest Helen Paris. Hello, Helen.
Hi, Irk, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am pretty fabulous, actually.
Awesome, and we'll find out why you're fabulous during this chat. Now, I was just saying to you before that 200 episodes ago, episode 180 of IRC FM, I was in London, and now I'm in your palace in suburbia. So a lot's happened since then. There was no metal show. This show specifically wasn't a show, and so we've come a long way. How did we actually meet in the first place? That's an interesting thing these days, how we met via the interweb.
We met via Twitter, I think, first, before we met in person. Yeah, so I think you followed my husband and he followed you, and then he was telling me about, oh, there's this guy that does this podcast and, you know, you should get onto him because, you know, he might be able to talk to you about your music and maybe he might play it. And, yes, it has been played a few times now, hasn't it?
Yes, it has indeed, because the funny thing about it is that, you know, I'd often see yourself and Shane chatting, etc., and then we got to know each other, that sort of thing, and we're both fellow Westies.
We are, yes. I am a proud Westie. I live in the Blacktown area, and, how bogan does my voice go when I say Blacktown? I live in the Blacktown area, yeah. I've been in this house for just a bit over 3 years now, but before that we lived in Parramatta. But before that we didn't even live in Sydney, so I consider myself as a Sydney-sider to be a Westie.
Yep. So how is that for people outside Sydney, outside Australia? How would you describe that as a good thing?
Well, basically, Western Sydney is pretty much bigger than almost any other place. Well, it's bigger than any other city in New South Wales. It's just this huge, big, sprawling area of different pockets with different kinds of focuses of nationalities and stuff like that. And where I live is really, really multicultural. Yeah. So it's great. Oh, my goodness, my baby is escaping.
Quick, come back, baby. Which is ironic because we're both Westies. We're coming to you from basically the centre of Western Sydney. But the only place up until now that I'd actually seen you and seen you perform was at the news agency in inner Western Sydney.
Yep, because there's pretty much no venues out here. There's a couple of little places in Parramatta, like Mars Hill Cafe in Parramatta, where I've played once. But out this way, it doesn't seem to really be anywhere unless you're doing a tribute show and an RSL or something like that. And, so it's really hard to find places to play.
So for people who haven't heard you, and I know I have featured a few times in recent episodes, how would you describe your music?
I call it suburban indie cabaret piano pop, or some version of that usually. The cabaret is because of all of the storytelling. The suburban is kind of a reflection of where I live. I've never been a city girl so much. I grew up in a regional town. You can probably hear my baby. I grew up in a regional town, and I never really lived in the city so much. The closest I got to living in the city was probably when I lived in Brisbane and I lived in Clayfield, which was about, I don't know, 10 minutes out of the city, which in Brisbane is still a reasonable way.
Yeah.
In Sydney, it's not. I'm a very suburban person. I'm settled in the burbs, and I think my music kind of reflects that as well.
How did you get into music in the first place? How did the Helen Perra story start?
Well, it pretty much started when I was old enough to walk and talk. I used to get up on tables and stuff at family gatherings, announce to everyone that I was going to perform, and then perform. I've always been a bit of a show off, and I always needed to be the centre of attention. So that's where it really started. My parents put me in dance lessons and music lessons, and I've basically just been making music and performing music ever since I can remember. And I started writing music when I was about 7, but I didn't really take a career in songwriting seriously until a few years ago.
So what does a 7-year-old write songs about?
I didn't write songs so much at 7 as more like just little piano pieces.
Yeah.
And I started writing pop songs when I was 11.
That's cool. So you've started taking things seriously in the last few years. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I got to lend my piano to Amanda Palmer, and that was pretty cool because she played a house gig in Sydney. It was actually the first house gig that she ever did. My husband and I went to it, and they needed a piano. So, so I said, yeah, sure, she can play my piano. So, that was a brilliant gig. And at the end of the night, Amanda was signing things and everything, and I asked her if she would sign my piano. And then Shane, my husband, said, like within earshot of Amanda while she was standing right there, basically, "So, Helen, are you going to play now?" And I looked at him and said, "You can't play that in front of Amanda Palmer." No. Yes.
And I imagine that's exactly how it sounded too.
Well, it was more in the look. I don't think I actually said anything, but that was like what the look was saying. But then Amanda turned around to me and she said, "Yes, you must seize this opportunity." And I thought, okay, right. And so I sat down at the piano and I played You Can Have What I Gave, and I sung it. And I didn't think that anyone was really listening because everyone was chatting after the gig and she continued to sign things and whatever. And then, I finished the song and she turned around and she said, "That was beautiful." And I just went, "Oh!" Because Amanda Palmer thought my song was beautiful. So, that was pretty cool. And then at that gig there was a promoter, and Kim Bookbinder was there because she was supporting Amanda Palmer. And then Kim was staying in Australia because her boyfriend lives in Australia. And then she was doing a gig in Sydney at the Red Rattler in the April. That was in the January that I did that thing with Amanda Palmer. The Amanda Palmer thing was in the January and Kim Bookbinder was playing a gig in April. And I was asked to be the opener for her. And at that point in time, I really only had 2 songs that I was happy with. One of them was the one that I'd played that Amanda Palmer had liked. But I said to the promoter, "Yeah, sure, yes, I'll play that gig, I'll open, yeah, that'll be fantastic." And then I'm thinking, oh, my God, I've got to write. So I sat down and I pretty much wrote 3 new songs within a week to be played at that gig. And, so I did a little 5-song set and that was it. And people told me at the gig, "Oh, we really like your music. Where can I buy it?" So I thought, okay, I guess I'm making an EP.
Did that turn into flesh?
That became flesh, yes.
How does songwriting normally work for you when you don't have the pressure of, "Oh my God, I need to do a gig and I've got no material"? How does it normally work?
Normally, I get a bee in my bonnet about something or other, and then I have to get it out somehow. that's where a song called Dancing Around the Subject came from. I was getting really peeved off with some people on the internet.
Oh, that never happens.
So I had to get it out so that I didn't let it fester.
Yep.
And as soon as I get it out of my system and make it into a song, then it doesn't bother me anymore, and then it becomes a song. So that's how a lot of my songs begin.
What comes first usually, words or tunes, music?
Usually words, but sometimes things start with a riff or a musical idea, or maybe a phrase starts with words and music.
Yeah.
And I have to be careful not to write too much of the music first and then try and put the lyrics to that, because I find I really struggle then to make my lyrics make sense. Yeah. I find, the way I used to write, and this is why when I did that Kim Bookbinder gig, I had to write new songs, because I had a whole heap of old songs, but I just didn't like any of them. I thought that the lyrics were really crappy.
Are you ever playing a bit of music and you think that you've come up with something really awesome, and then when you listen back to it, you think, oh, that's part of someone else's song altogether, I can't use it because it's too much like them?
Yes. And it's really annoying. Yeah, and sometimes it's just even an inkling that it sounds too familiar. And usually if I find something sounds too familiar, I just abandon it. I don't even know if it is something that I've heard before or not. I just can't be bothered doing all the research to try and find out if it is.
A shame that at the moment that it's 3 o'clock in the morning and that you're actually asleep. I know you're a bit of a night owl. What do you do, if anything, if you come up with an idea for a song or anything like that? What do you do, if anything?
I very rarely come up with things in the middle of the night. Sometimes I come up with something like just as I'm going to sleep, and I try to write it down, or I record it on my phone somehow, because my phone is always next to me because I can't live without it. Yeah. yeah, but I usually try and get it down, and if I don't, then it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the reason I ask that question to a lot of artists, because some people have different reactions. Some people will automatically get up, write it down, play their instrument of choice or whatever, and then others, like you just said, if it's gone, it's gone. If it's not worth waking up for, if it's not worth recording, and you don't remember it in the morning, it's gone.
Yep. And I think part of that is because I really value my sleep. A lot of other artists can sleep in the morning. I can't. I've got to get a seven-year-old to school. And I've got a nine-month-old baby. So, yeah, he sucks a lot of the sleep out of me.
Yeah. Tell us about your song Palace of Suburbia, based on the place where we're actually right now.
Okay, well, Palace in Suburbia is about this house. And where we're sitting right now, it's our dining area, but just next to us, which is supposed to be the rumpus room, has probably about a dozen boxes that haven't been unpacked yet, or they've been semi-unpacked, and things that we didn't know where to put have just been shoved in them, because this house doesn't have any storage. And I got so frustrated about the house. I'm always frustrated about it, but I was particularly frustrated because when we moved in, there were we knew that there were problems with the house, but then when we actually moved in, we found there were a lot more problems with the house than we were anticipating, and things that we knew had to be fixed were much bigger jobs than we were anticipating as well. So things like, for example, we knew that there had to be some electrical work done. It turns out instead of about $2,500 worth of electrical work, it was $10,000 worth of electrical work. So, yeah, that was really very depressing and it was very difficult. But, I got it out in a song. What I had to do was just write a list of all of the things that were pissing me off about the house, and that list turned into the song Palace in Suburbia.
And a lot of people seem to like it when you perform it live.
Yeah, because they, well, usually when I sing it, I preface it with the fact that every word is true, and they think, well, it can't be possibly true, but yeah, it is, and there's just, it's just a comedy of errors, really.
No shed, no space in the bedroom to put the spare bed. The floorboards don't look right. I fear that instead they're actually meant for a wall. But oh, this place is our own. emanates from the kitchen. The plaster is poorly applied. The doorways are crooked, the paint job's a mess, and I have no wardrobe to hang up my dress. It sounds a disaster, but I must confess that that is just the inside. But cut so many corners, it was a disgrace. It will take years to fix its mistakes. Who builds an extension without hiring a skip, and instead digs a hole in the yard and buries the rubble, asbestos and glass, wood planks and Besa blocks. It's such a farce. You'd break your leg just by mowing the grass, or at least get a little God. But all this place is our own, and all will no longer roam. We'll build a life here, husband and wife here, for better or worse, it's our.
Do you find sometimes that listening to other artists that they tend to sing songs that nobody can relate to, that are so unreal that, you know, you just don't believe that they actually wrote it?
No, but I find a lot of songs are really generic. More than singing about heightened stuff, it's more like, you know, they sing about something that, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to connect. Yeah. A lot of people, or especially a lot of the modern pop artists, mainly because I think that they don't really write a lot of what they do themselves anyway, they just don't really connect with their own music.
And I think that's the difference with someone like you. You can tell all the stories are genuine.
Yeah, I hope people can tell. because basically everything that I write has come from my life. Somehow, sometimes I obscure the initial genesis of the song,
yep,
for privacy reasons, or to make it a little bit more interesting for poetic license. But generally, they're pretty close to the truth.
So let's talk about your first EP, Flesh. I think I've featured every song across various episodes now. How long did that process take?
I set myself a year to do it once I decided that I was going to actually make the EP, and I managed to get it all together in 9 months, which is pretty cool. So I crowdfunded it. So I had to do a whole heap of research first because I'd never crowdfunded anything before. So I did a whole heap of research. I worked out all of the steps that I was going to have to take. So I really planned the whole thing out. And then, I got some money together. I expanded my audience a bit through that and through using social media. And then I went into the studio and I did this hard slog of 5 consecutive days to get it done. Recording 5 songs and mixing in 5 days, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone because it was exhausting, exhilarating, but exhausting. And then I got the graphic design done and I got it all manufactured and then it was out. So it was this kind of surreal experience in a way, and it was very, very much like having a baby, and the 9 months thing ties into that. That's partly why I called it Flesh as well.
I can imagine how you would have felt the first time you've held one of your babies for the first time, but what was it like the very first time you held the completed CD in your hand?
I remember the unboxing. It was really exciting. I cut the box open and opened it up and I was like, oh my God, there are all my CDs. And I pulled them out and I had to open one of them up because they're all shrink wrapped. I opened one of them up, ripped open the shrink wrap and opened it up and looked at it and looked at all the pictures and it was just so beautiful and I nearly cried. So, yeah, it was a bit like holding my son for the first time.
Yeah. So you said that when you're in the studio, it was a long process of basically 5 days of doing anything. How long should the process have taken? You said that it was, you know, exhausting but exhilarating for 5 days. How long should you have taken, do you think?
It would have been nice to have had a little bit more leeway because I felt a bit rushed, especially towards the end, and it would have been better to have a bit more time for mixing as well, I think, because I guess it's okay because it was my first CD and it's called Flesh, so it was a bit raw. Yep. And I think that it kind of works like that anyway, but I'm looking forward to doing finishing off my new CD. I've actually started work on it. Because it's going to be much more polished. It would have been better, I think, to take, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 more days, maybe another week.
Is there time, or should there be time, between the time that you actually record and the time you actually mix? Should you give yourself a little bit of time in between?
Yeah, I think so, actually. I think we might have been able to come up with... You're very noisy. We might have been able to come up with something. I think I would have been more picky, but I'd heard everything so much so recently that...
You are very noisy.
I'd heard everything so recently that, I think a bit of space would have helped. Yeah.
So what stage are you at with the new recording?
I'm probably about halfway through. I'm only doing 4 songs on this new EP, not 5. Partly that's for financial reasons, but also I think it's just going to make a tighter record as well. And I have my 9-month-old here and he's pulled up to standing on me and he's very excited and has absolutely no idea that we're being interviewed right now. We've done all of the drums, all the piano, bar one, all the bass, some of the guitar. So I'm going to be doing vocals. Well, actually, I'm doing the vocals at the moment, and then we'll pretty much be finished. So, but I'm expecting to do quite a lot of vocal layers this time because I really like the wall of sound. And, I think we might be doing quite a lot of harmonies.
So who have you got behind you with all the instrumentation and harmonies and whatnot?
Well, I'm going to do all my own harmonies. I like singing with myself. But that'll also get that real wall of sound thing that I'm after. I'm really into the whole Beach Boys kind of thing with those kind of harmonies at the moment. I've obviously been playing all the keys, but my producer, Josh, he's a multi-instrumentalist and he's played all of the drums and the bass and the guitar and, the two of us together basically are playing everything.
So you've got the multi-instrumentalist behind you. How would you recreate that live if you were going to?
Well, I don't know if I would. Usually when I play live, it's just me and the piano. Yep. And I think the way that it's being recorded, the piano and the vocals are still the focus. Everything else is supporting that. So it's, yeah, I think it'll still translate live. The other possibility is my friend Alison Avron worked with the same producer, and when she launched her EP, she had some sort of semi kind of done backing tracks so that she could play piano and sing along with them, and that worked all right as well. So that's another possibility, but I'm not really sure if I'm going to do that. Haven't thought about that yet.
Yeah. How was the studio experience this time compared to Flesh?
It's much more relaxed. I've got a lot more time to think and to experiment as well. I went into the recording for Flesh with a very good idea of what I wanted to do, and I wanted to keep it pretty simple, and we didn't really change anything up at the time.
Yeah.
But with this new one, we've done a few small changes to the songs just to make them tighter, and and it's good to sort of play with different ideas as we go along to create the sound that we're really after.
Does the EP have a name yet?
Oh, it does have a name. It only just has a name. I've just given it a name. It's called Aniro, which means dream in Greek.
Okay. Interesting. So you're going down the crowdfunding path again. Have you learned anything since the first time?
I think the first time I was really struggling to find that line between enough promotion and really annoying everyone. And I worried too much that I was annoying people and probably didn't quite promote enough. So this time I'm worrying less about annoying people. But also I'm trying to think of creative ways to promote it as well and not just bombarding everyone with the same message every time. So, yeah, especially on Twitter, because that can get really irritating.
And I know we've had this conversation before, and the same applies to me with promoting this show. It's a fine balance between pleasure and pain, so to speak. You can go at it too hard, and you can also go at it not enough. So finding that balance is really difficult sometimes.
Yeah, it is, and I'm trying to keep the tweets down to only a couple of day and spacing them out at different times of the day as well. I'm not sort of... You're very noisy. I'm not so worried about it with the Facebook page, because the reach on my Facebook page isn't anywhere near as wide as the reach on my Twitter.
Hey, friends, let me ask you a question. When is the last time you visited the Association of Music Podcasting's website at musicpodcasting.org? You didn't? What are you missing? Well, here's the deal. Each and every podcaster from the Association of Music Podcasting puts out shows on a regular basis, and you can find listings for all of those shows and all of that great music that you may be missing right there at musicpodcasting.org. We also have a Facebook page, and it lets you know every time we put out a new show. It's at facebook.com/musicpodcasting. Oh, and by the way, we're on Twitter at twitter.com/musicpodcasting.
So for listeners who aren't aware, how does this crowdfunding work in your case?
Well, I'm going with Possible, And unlike some other crowdfunding platforms, with Possible, if you don't meet your goal, you don't get anything. So the people who have pledged don't get charged until your goal is met. So it's kind of nerve-wracking for me because this time around I've asked for $3,000, and that's basically going to cover the manufacture and things like mastering and stuff. And I also am including in that the cost of postage of the EP and all of that sort of stuff. So the cost of running the campaign and having all of the rewards and stuff. Yeah, so because I'm asking for $3,000 this time and last time I only asked for $1,500, I'm kind of going, oh, I really need to I need to make sure I get it, because if I don't, then I can't actually afford to have physical copies of the EP. I've saved up a bit of money and I'm going into quite a lot of debt as well to do the recording.
So how did you decide, do you get to decide how long the campaign goes for?
Yes, I decided this time it was going to be 40 days and I've got 1 week left. Woo!
So what can people do? How can people get involved? I know you've got various levels for various levels of commitment.
That is right. You can choose to just give me money if you want. But I'm very, very, very happy to give you something in return. So you can get just one song as a pre-release single digitally if you pledge a dollar. So every dollar counts.
Yep.
And then if you pledge $5, you get the whole EP digitally pre-release. Then it's $15 to get the physical EP posted out to you. $25, you get a basic merch pack as well, which is going to have some stickers and magnets and stuff in it as well. As well as the EP, obviously. And then it goes up from there. I've got a whole heap of rewards, so lots of digital things, add-ons like the lyric booklet and sheet music and things like that. And I've got some merch as well. And then you get into the really high-end ones and you start looking at experiences, which is pretty cool. Somebody has already pledged to get the first experience pack, which gives them a singing lesson over Skype with me. So that's pretty cool. There's also, you can choose a cover song and I'll play it, or learn it, play it, record it, put it up on YouTube for you, dedicate it to you. My favourite reward that no one's actually picked yet is the custom shoes one. So for $150, you get the EP, the physical EP posted out to you. You also get your name on the thank yous in the EP, and I will paint you a pair of shoes, not just like solid colour, but like I'll do a really cool design with fabric paint and in your size as well. But no one's chosen that one yet.
How did you come up with that idea?
Because I did a pair for myself and I thought that they'd be fun. So, I've made a pair of rainbows and thunder shoes and I wear them.
Yeah.
And every time I wear them, people look at them and they go, oh, wow, I like your shoes. So I thought other people might like them as well. But obviously not. But that's okay. And I've got another experience where you can either workshop or write a song with me, or the other alternative at that level is you come and visit me in the studio. And there's only one of those left as we talk now, so that's pretty cool.
And then you've also got some for if you want someone, or someone wants you to play at their house, is that right?
That is right. If you live within an hour's drive of my house, then you can have a house party for $500. And the good thing about that as well is you don't have to pony up the $500 all yourself. You can ask people to contribute, like the people that will be coming, and that can help to offset the costs. And then if you live outside of Sydney but still inside Australia, or I just added New Zealand onto that because I realised that flying to New Zealand isn't any more expensive than flying to Perth. Then for $750, you can have the same thing, basically. And that just, it's a bit extra because that covers the cost of me flying.
What would be the most popular option that people have chosen so far, do you think?
So far, there's been a lot of people that have chosen to just get the EP by itself, but I think there's been more people that have chosen the level where they get the name in the thank yous. Yeah. So that's been pretty popular as well.
So you've mentioned sheet music there. How do you actually decide what note is what when it comes down to the sheet music when you're actually writing the song? How do you know, oh, this is an A or this is a B or whatever? How do you know that?
Because I play piano.
Yeah.
I'm a trained musician. So I've been able to create my own sheet music. And a lot of musicians can't do that, actually, because they don't read music and they can't write music down. They can maybe write chord charts. They might know how to figure out what chords they're playing if they play guitar or whatever, or some of them on piano. I write down note for note exactly what I play on the piano.
So when you're trying to, like, flesh out a song, pun not intended, you got like a high note, low note, and then you sort of work out where it is on the register.
Well, I know exactly what I'm singing. So, for the vocal part, I know what it is. Yeah. It's really hard to explain, actually, because I just know what notes I'm singing and they generally don't change. So,
Yeah, it's a bit of a non-musician question, that one, for someone who doesn't really have the knowledge that you do when it comes to things like music, because apart from anything else, you're also a music teacher.
I am, yeah. I teach piano and singing. That's my day job. It's great because I don't have to work in a crummy cafe or, you know, at a supermarket or anything like that to earn money when I'm not making money from my music, which is most of the time. Yay, independent music. I'm very lucky. I get to make all of my work is to do with music.
So you can probably come to the answer for this next question in possibly three different ways. How important is music for someone like a child, for instance? Someone who comes to you to learn how to play music, how important is music to a child?
All children, when they start out, are musicians. All children are creative. And it's really important that they don't lose that. Children are inquisitive and they question, and mine is about to electrocute himself.
Get out of there.
As I said, inquisitive. The important thing about music for a child is it keeps them being creative, and it can teach them parameters, within that they're able to work within. But the main thing is that it gives them a creative outlet.
Yeah.
And, because as you grow older, you get told to stop questioning. You get told to be quiet and keep your hands still and don't bang on things and all of that sort of stuff. And, so I think it's really very important that kids get some kind of arts education.
I know one of the reasons I ask that question, because I ask many of the musicians, and it doesn't matter if they're pianists like yourself or into hard rock or even into metal. When you speak to a lot of them, they got their start from piano, and when they were a child, they really hated piano lessons, but when they're older, they saw the benefit of it and wished they were still doing it in many cases.
They obviously had the wrong teacher if they hated their lessons, because piano lessons can be heaps of fun. And, yeah, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit boring because you have to practice, and there is a certain amount of rigor required. If you're learning a whole heap of different kinds of music and you're experimenting, and if your teacher encourages you to experiment as well and to create, not just learn what's on the page, but, you know, to mess with what's on the page and to make up your own interpretation of what's on the page, and then to create your own music yourself and then maybe learn how to write it down, then, you know, that's much more interesting. And I think if all music teachers did that, then no one would find piano lessons boring.
Now, of course, you're basically solo providing a music teaching service. What about, for instance, a teacher in a primary school? Would they necessarily have any music training, or is it just a case of, you know, pull out the triangle, pull out the tambourine, as I got in primary school?
It depends on the school. I know that at my son's school, they're very lucky to have a teacher there who's not a music specialist. She's not a primary music specialist, but she is musically trained. She plays trombone and a couple of other instruments. And so she runs a school choir and the school record group. But a lot of schools don't have that. Where I grew up in Queensland, actually, we had specialist music teachers. So every primary school child had access to a specialist musical education, which was amazing. And, yeah, so we learnt all sorts of things with all sorts of different kinds of music. And yeah, there was a lot of that banging a triangle business. But it wasn't just that. And we learnt a lot about how to read the symbols of music.
Yeah.
I mean, I already knew because I'd already been learning outside of school anyway, but the kids that didn't have that were still able to learn some of the symbolism and some of the theoretical stuff as well, but in a fun kind of way.
So if there is a child, or it might not even necessarily be a child, I know I was trying to teach myself how to play guitar, but I just got too busy and have basically stopped. You'd recommend people try it if they've got any sort of talent or inkling?
Yeah, hell yeah. And you're never too old to learn either. I used to have a student. He's just moved to the Blue Mountains in the last few months, so he stopped coming to me for lessons because it's a bit too far to travel. But, yeah, when he came to me, he was 71, I think. So he had decided that he'd always wanted to learn to play.
Yeah.
He'd tried to teach himself for a little while and kind of got as far as he could go. And then, thought he would come to a piano teacher. Yeah. And he was learning for a few years.
So the last time that I actually saw you at a gig, it was at Alison Avron's EP launch. How was that?
Oh, that was so much fun. Yeah, I got to rock a leather miniskirt. Yeah, that was cool. And, I was singing backing vocals for her. So, yeah, she's a great friend.
So how different for you is doing backing vocals compared to doing your own vocals?
Well, it's very much different because when you're singing your own stuff, you're really thinking about what it means to you and connecting with it and connecting with the audience. But when you're singing backing vocals, it's all about supporting the lead singer. Mm. So making sure that you're really listening to them and blending with the other backing vocalists as well if we're doing harmonies. And, yeah, trying to get the sound right rather than anything to do with emotions or connection so much. I mean, there's a little bit of that, but it's much more about being a support for the lead singer.
So how much rehearsal would have been involved in that?
We had one rehearsal. But, you know, that's because we're pros, man. But also it's because, you know, we already knew the songs too. So we had a rehearsal and worked out who was going to sing which parts, and then we had a little run-through again in sound check just to check that we were all right. And, yeah. And that was fine.
And it really worked, because I know that Alison was saying that she really enjoyed getting everyone together as well, and, you know, having backing vocals as well.
Yeah, I actually kind of want to get backing vocalists myself now for my EP launch, and maybe it'll happen, but I don't know. That's I haven't actually thought about the launch yet. I'm still too focused on the crowdfunding and the recording. And, yeah, so when the crowdfunding is over, then I can maybe start planning the launch.
So that's really cool, because I think it's important to be able to not only do your own things, but it gives you another string to your bow, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I like playing with other people too, because it can get a little bit lonely when you're just a solo artist. You know, you practice alone in your room. You know, you're confined to that that very isolated space for a lot of the time. You know, you write alone, you practice alone, you perform alone. So when you know, well, I mean, a lot of the performing is about interacting with the audience, so that's not quite so lonely. But it's a very different vibe when you're playing with other musicians as well.
And I know you've picked up a few new fans as a direct result of that particular night. Hello, Timbo.
Yeah, that was a nice little side benefit, actually. Yeah.
Awesome. So hopefully by the time that people are listening to this, you've pretty much reached your goal. I know you've been tracking how close you've been getting to the goal.
Yeah, as we record, we've still got about $400 and something left to go before my goal. So, yeah, hopefully by the time this goes to air, I'll be there.
And then you'll be able to hear a very excited Helen to say, yes, 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 I've done it. How can we find out how you're going? How can we interact with you on the social networks?
Probably the easiest way is if you follow me on Twitter. And my Twitter handle is just Helen Peris, H-E-L-E-N-P-E-R-R-I-S. Peris rhymes with Ferris, as in Ferris wheel or Ferris Bueller.
You've never had that before in your life, have you?
People get it wrong all the time. They either totally mispronounce it or they totally misspell it, or both. A lot of people seem to think it's Perez or Periz and that I'm Spanish or something, but no, I'm not. And it's my married name as well anyway, so even if I was Spanish, it would still be wrong. Yes, but anyway, Twitter, Helen Peris on Twitter. I tweet about my possible campaign intermittently, and I've also got the link in my bio as well. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Helen Peris Music. And you can find my website, which probably needs an update, but that's all good. I'm too busy doing all the other more important things. And that's www.helenperismusic.com.
Awesome. So, Helen, it's been a lot of fun. And hopefully by the time listeners are listening to this, you've got your goal, and hopefully in a few months there'll be an EP launch, and that'll be rather cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping for mid-November. That's the plan. But, yeah, it's not set in stone yet.
So stay tuned and find out.
Yes, definitely stay tuned to IRC FM.
Awesome. Well, I've been IRC, Helen's been Helen, and it's been very interesting. Great to catch up with you, not at a gig, because sometimes you know what gigs are like.
Oh, yeah, it gets a bit manic. I get a bit manic. Hey, I'm a bit manic now, but that's all right.
So on behalf of Helen and myself, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from him.
And see you next week. Don't forget, music is life.
If you follow me on Twitter, and a lot of you do, you will probably have seen my hashtag #NewHouseYay. It's very ironic. And this song is why. No bathroom, no closets of use at all. No cupboards. doorways are crooked, the paint job's a mess, and I have no wardrobe to hang up my dress. It sounds a disaster, but I must confess that it's just the inside. But
it's not.